I try to help people understand that, you know what, you are not what a diagnosis says. You are not what you're going through, right? And again, your value, your worth, your identity is not attached to your performance in life. Not just in sports, I work with a lot of athletes, but in life in general.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast, helping leaders live with integrity.
Okay, so welcome back, and we are going to talk a lot about mental health, leadership, and also just about the crisis that we're seeing on the front lines right now, just globally. You know, Dr. Van der Kolk, he's one of our leading researchers on trauma. He is saying that today's most, the epidemic on the front lines right now is unresolved trauma and the ripple effect that we're seeing in our homes, in our workplaces, in our churches. Counseling has really become really kind of the new pastor, the new priest in many ways. It used to not be a form that we would go to, especially as Christians, but it has become a place, a safe place for people to process and to do some more healing. We're just going to talk about the combination of that. And then if you're a high capacity leader, stay tuned to this because we're going to be talking with a high level leader who has some wisdom he wants to pass on to you today.
Yeah, so Zach Clinton currently serves as the Vice President of the American Association of Christian Counselors. He's the host of the renowned Built Different podcast and is the president and host of Ignite Men's Impact Weekend that gathers nearly 10,000 guys each year. A licensed resident counselor in Virginia, he is completing his doctoral program in counseling education and supervision at Liberty University. And he's a former Division I college baseball player, which is awesome, and is recognized as a growing authority and voice on performance, motivational psychology, and mental health for today's generations. Hey, Zach, it's really great to have you on the podcast today, man.
Jeff and Tara, thank you guys so much. I am ecstatic to be joining you guys. I love what you're doing with this Living Wholehearted podcast, so I'm grateful to be here.
We're so grateful.
Well, Zach, hey, let's give a chance for our audience. It's our tradition just to have our guests kind of share a little bit of their own story, right? You know, this kind of getting under the hood. Hey, what makes you tick? What informs what you're doing today and what you're about? So tell us a little bit about who you are, your family growing up experiences, you know, what's sort of shaped who you are today and who you long to be.
I love that question, Jeff. You know, I grew up in a Christian home my entire life. My parents are two of my very best friends, Tim and Julie. My dad, Dr. Tim, has been the president here of the American Association of Christian Counselors for about 35 years now. He started this way back in the day. He was like the treasurer alongside of Dr. Gary Collins, who had a kind of a pioneering leading expertise in Christian psychology. And so just being able to grow up in the faith, see kind of what Tara insinuated in terms of this soul care ministry that mental health really is, it's important to recognize that mental health is so much more than just the mind. It also encompasses our emotional, our psychological, our social. You can break down social to kind of relational, spiritual well-being. And when we recognize that the soul encompasses body, mind, and spirit, man, it's something that is so much fun. And I love just diving into the depths of despair with people. Something I've just taken a liking to, something I've grown passionate about. And I think that really does stem back, Jeff, to just watching my dad do it for so long. And so I'm grateful that I've got to follow in his footsteps. I'm grateful that I've got to see his example. And I'm just grateful that I get to learn alongside of and with him every single day.
Well, you give us hope because when our girls were little, we prayed for them. Jeff was a pastor and I was a new marriage and family therapist. And we thought, oh no, our poor children have a counselor and a pastor.
They're screwed.
So you give us hope, Zach, just knowing that you sat underneath watching your dad really walk alongside the grieving and the hurting. And so that's what you're doing today. You know, I really would love to hear your perspective because you're on the front lines. You both have a caseload yourself. And then you're also the vice president of the American Association for Christian Counselors, trying to shepherd these counselors and these coaches and pastors that are on the front lines. What are you seeing right now as really the main issue? Do you agree with Dr. Van der Kolk, or would you say it a different way?
I absolutely agree with Dr. Vander Kolk, and I think I agree with even what you kind of mentioned in the intro there, Tara, was just this idea that mental health has almost become the buzzword for culture and society today all over the world. Everybody is interested in what's going on. And I think when you look back over the last 4 to 5 years, we always say here at AACC that we were in a mental health crisis pre-COVID-19, right? The statistics were staggering then. But ever since COVID-19, the lockdowns, the loneliness, the isolation, you add on to that the racial tension, the rash shootings, the wars, so many things, right? I think what we're seeing, we're just overloaded with fear. And when you go through seasons like we've gone over the last 4 to 5 years, as I mentioned, it would only be indicative that the mental health statistics would continually spike. And that's what we're seeing. Anxiety, depression, addiction, suicidality, all of these things are rising to levels that we've never seen before. So it's heartbreaking because you have so many people that are desperately seeking help, hope, and healing. But a lot of times they don't know where to turn. Why? Because unfortunately, again, we live in a kind of society and culture that has equated brokenness with humiliation or embarrassment, where people, there is still that a little bit of stigma, although I think we live in a time where it's probably the most destigmatized it's ever been. People are actually, I saw a statistic the other day, 9 times more likely to seek help. That's a great thing, but I think that's because there is such a need, such a desire, such a brokenness, such a hurting, such a stirring within the world today. So my goal and what we love to do at AACC is to educate, to equip, and to encourage other people to care for people God's way, to remind people that, you know what, there is hope, and hope has a name, and that name is Jesus, reminding us that we can point people toward that ultimate source of power and of peace, and recognize that we don't have all the answers, but we know the one who is the answer. And so when we do that thing, and we bridge the gap between the local church and the mental health profession, I think a lot of good can be done. So that's our heart here at AACC. That's kind of what I'm seeing. Again, a lot of fear, a lot of hurting, but also, again, a lot of hope.
I love the hope I hear in your voice. And, you know, it's interesting because, yes, we were talking about isolation before COVID and the pandemic and how it was an epidemic. The digital age didn't help us with that. We thought it would connect us, but it made us more isolated and disconnected and addicted to our devices. So fast forward, it's interesting, and I don't know if this is across the country or even global, but I know in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, it's almost vogue for our younger generation, our Gen Zers, to have a diagnosis and to live within that brokenness identity. Yeah. What do you think about that, Zach? And are you seeing that in your neck of the woods?
Absolutely. I think there are people that don't want, like you said, that identity of a diagnosis. And what I try to help people understand that, you know what, you are not what a diagnosis says. You are not what you're going through, right? And again, your value, your worth, your identity is not attached to your performance in life, not just in sports. I work with a lot of athletes, but in life in general. So for instance, just because I may feel anxious, just because I may be going through depression does not mean that that's all that I am. Again, it's trying to reveal to people that there is so much more to life than all of this. And I'm glad that you brought up you talk about technology in the day and age we live in. I work with a lot of youth. I work with a lot of adolescents, next gen. That's my heart. That's my passion. I love investing in the next generation. So as I walk alongside of kids, you see this technology addiction like never before. I feel like the next gen is the most digitally connected generation that's ever walked the face of the earth, the most relationally disconnected generation that's ever walked the face of the earth. We know how to do screen-to-screen contact and interaction, but not face-to-face. And when we lack embodied relationship and embodied friendship, we're missing the full kind of meal of life, whereas this technology is just the snack of life. One of my friends, Justin Whitmell, early, who I've interviewed on the podcast before, he says that phones, technology, are a means by which we can enhance friendship, but not the means by which we should do friendship. And he talks about in his book, Made for People, he says that we kind of, it's natural for us to drift into this current of loneliness. And as we talk to leaders, as we're talking to people right now, the viewers, the listeners out there, he gives one of the most unique definitions to loneliness that I've ever heard. Typically, when we think of loneliness, we think of the people who live in hibernation, right? Kind of the hermits that never come out of the house. But what he says is he defines loneliness as someone who used to have friends. And I think about that in my own personal life. And I'm like, man, you know what? Before you get the job, before you get the promotion, before you come to mom or dad, before you get married, before all of, you know, the pressures of work and life and the balance of things come into play, it's easy to have friends when you're a kid, when you're in school, when you're in college. But when you get out of that, we have to recognize that it's natural for us to drift into this current of loneliness, but we have to fight back against the current for a life of meaningful and covenant friendship. So that's my heart for kids. I want to push them into social settings. I want them to learn how to do relationship well, and I want them to find community.
Hey, this is a good word, Zach. I love to fly fish, and I use this metaphor often when I talk about what's healthy. And you just talking about current has me right in the river. And when you work, when you go and wade a river, and the coolest part is that wild fish, the healthy fish that all fly fishers love to pursue, not the hatchery versions, but the wild fish they love to pursue. They're swimming upstream, unless the salmon steelhead that head out to the ocean to go get big and come back. But they're facing resistance on a regular basis, actually. Yeah. That's how we grow and get strong. And translating that for a younger generation and helping them to know what's normal and also not getting swept up. I think of another analogy in my experience growing up surfing in the Oregon coast. It's like, oh my gosh, the currents of the ocean are overwhelming and they will take you where it wants to go if you're not careful. Placing yourself in the right spots is so important. Otherwise, you can be caught up in a sneaker wave and all kinds of things. These things sneak up on us if we're not careful. So you got to be intentional. I love that you're speaking to that and you're helping to lead people in that way and translate what is normal. So it's beautiful. We got a common heart here.
Well, and I'm thinking about the definition you gave of loneliness and how fitting that is for we talk a lot about leaders and isolation and just how it's a slow drift or getting in the current, however we're talking about it, of being isolated because of the demands and the time, the lack of time. So talk about Christian leaders and even mental health providers specifically, but Christian leaders who are finding themselves lonely. You know, they're around a lot of people. They're helping lots of people.
Doing great work.
Yeah, doing great work. But what would you say to them, or what are you seeing is kind of the issue there?
You know, with a lot of leaders that I get the opportunity of working with personally, walking alongside of throughout life, I see a lot of stress. I see a lot of burnout. Like you said, I see a lot of loneliness because I think oftentimes we're doing great work, but we overwork ourselves, right? To what extent? Sometimes we want to save the entire world, but to the point of forfeiting potentially our own souls, forfeiting our families, forfeiting our friendships, forfeiting our communities, right? And all of these things really do matter, because if you don't have things that are filling your cup, you're just giving people the scraps and not the spillover. And so recognizing how are we prioritizing self-growth, self-improvement, and self-care. The best leaders that I have ever been around are the ones that I would say prioritize really four things. The first one is they know how to lead themselves before they lead other people. When they recognize, that's biblical too. You look at Christ, it says that Christ in his early years, he was actually found in the temples growing in favor and in stature, right? Not just physically, not just mentally, but also with God and man relationally and spiritually. He understood the priority of self-care. He understood the priority of self-improvement, self-growth, self-development. He also, when he was leading tons of people in the years of his ministry, how often did he sneak up into the mountains and actually just spend time alone with God, growing as a man, fully God, but yet fully man, prioritizing those things. If God's doing it, I tell you what, we surely need to be doing it. We need to be prioritizing it. So lead yourself before you lead others. The second one is that leaders are others oriented. I often say that you don't have to lead in order to serve, but you have to serve in order to lead. That's probably an answer that you guys have heard here several times as you talk about leadership and effective and efficient leaders. But I'm reminded of a book that I read years ago by John Ortberg that's called I'd Like You More If You Were More Like Me. And in that book, he talks about that Christ isn't only the most significant example of a leader, he's also the best example of what true and real intimacy looks like. And how John defines intimacy is mastering the art of the shared experience. He said, picture Christ. What did Christ do? He hung out with his disciples, right? In every facet, in every way. They hiked together. They ate together. They prayed together. They fished together. Jeff, they did all these things together. But he was willing, right? He never traded, let's just say, the intimacy for efficiency. He was perfectly willing to go about doing his work more slowly if it meant connecting with his friends more deeply. And so when we recognize, again, that leaders are others oriented, that's a big thing. The third thing that I always want to talk about is that leaders surround themselves with other leaders. When you recognize that, I've seen a lot of leaders, again, live in silos, isolate themselves because they almost feel threatened by other leaders, right? They don't want to surround themselves. They don't want to have anybody else influence them in that way. And that's just selfish in my mind. Because if you really want to understand the definition of understanding, it's make mistakes, right? Identify mistakes and then learn why they're mistakes. Mm-hmm. Find people in your life that can not just surround you, but can support you and can sharpen you. Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man should sharpen another. We need people that will take us places within ourselves that we couldn't go by ourselves. And the last one is that I believe that the best leaders, they invest in the next generation, right? They actually pass off their giftings and talents and knowledge and wisdom to other people, because leaders understand this, that leadership is learned. You have to be able to grow. You have to be able to train others. And when we grow and train other people, then all of a sudden we're creating a legacy, which is something that long will outlive us. That is kind of my mind of good, effective leadership and how we can be pressing into others and recognize the significance of relationships along the way.
I love it. I know Jeff wants to ask a question, but I'm going to jump in real quick.
You go, girl. You go.
I'm like, before we leave, beautifully said, Zach. Okay, so how did your dad invest in you in the next generation being a leader? And here you are, son. Tell us an inside view of what does that look like along the way when you were a young man, and then the formalities of saying, hey, do you want to work with me in this org?
Absolutely.
We'd love to hear a little bit about that, because I think it'll give cue both for leaders of how to invest in those beneath them in their wake of influence, and then also the family business dynamic too.
Yep. So, you know, when you talk about investing in the next gen, I think about my dad. As I mentioned, my dad is not just my dad, right? I view him as like my best friend. He's my hunting, fishing buddy. He's the guy that I go to lunch with on almost a daily basis, my coach, my mentor, right? So many different things. He possesses all of these roles into one. He's done an incredible job, in my opinion, of knowing what it truly looks like to get outside of himself when it comes to the job, when it comes to the work, and invest in his family. And he prioritizes that. And that to me was something that always stood out more than anything else. I saw something the other day that said, you know, the only people that will remember you worked the long hours, right, are your kids. Right? And so recognizing that, you know what, my dad took the time to invest in me. How did that look? I think he reminded me of my worth and of my value, which was far more important in who I was becoming than in what I did. He never put pressure on me. He never said, Zach, you have to join this family business. Zach, you have to walk in my footsteps. And a lot of people ask the question, Zach, is there like this added sense of pressure? Is there this added sense of expectation on you that you have to live up to who your dad is? And I'll just be completely honest and frank with you guys, there's not, because my dad has done such a great job of reminding me again that I cannot be anybody but the best version of Zach Clinton. I cannot be a version of Tim Clinton, right? Because only my dad can fulfill that role. Only my dad can fulfill that identity. But he has given me the tools, in my opinion, in terms of passing down, sharing his knowledge, his wisdom. When he has anything going on in life, I tell you what, he will pick up the phone and call me. He will text me, and he's not afraid to accept influence from other people, right? He's not willing to accept. I mean, he's 100% willing to accept influence even from me, the younger generation. A lot of our office here at AACC now is next gen. We're young people, and Dad always says we bring a lot of life. We bring a lot of energy to this place, and it's fun, right? And Dad loves it because he loves continually learning and recognizing that that's what leadership takes and that's what leadership requires. So the family business, there really is not that added sense of pressure just because they've done such a good job of prioritizing relationship.
You can see it. It comes out through your voice and through your countenance, just that freedom that you have, which is, I mean, the real thing. That's like the freedom that your dad gave you in many ways to be you and to be with him, you know, that's a beautiful example, man. Mm-hmm. We want to see more and more of that kind of mentorship modeling with fathers and sons and fathers and daughters. It's a wonderful gift. So I wanted to ask a little bit more about just sort of rubber meets the road, how you are doing this, right? So how you list these four things, but really the first and foremost is one of the most important pieces, which is just, you know, how is this passing lived out, you know, as it relates to the integrity that you are aspiring to live within, you know, our heart, soul, mind, body, relationships, kind of moving in a similar direction, self-care, self-improvement you talked about. So what's that look like for you? I mean, you're in the midst of a doctoral program, so we got the learning pieces going on. But yeah, some of the other pieces here. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, you know, Jeff, I appreciate the question because I think it's important, again, to keep the main thing the main thing. So for me, every single day of my life, I always want to live with the posture of surrender and submission. I want to continually go to God and seek those answers from Him each and every day. I want to start my day in His Word. I think of those spiritual disciplines. I want to be surrounded by community. I want to be surrounded by fellowship. I want to be in His Word. I want to be in prayer. I want to do all of these things because I think of that process of spiritual formation in my life and recognizing that who we become is more important than what we do, but also on the flip side, what we do also has a heavy influence on who we become. So I want to make sure that the habits that I'm creating and that the decisions I'm making each and every day push me closer toward these goals and not pull me further away. So what that looks like, again, quiet time with the Lord every single day. Faith always comes first, but then also prioritizing my marriage, prioritizing family, prioritizing relationships. Those things fill my cup, right? Those things, they never really drain me. They always are something. I never regret the time I spend with my wife. I never regret the time I prioritize a date night. There's a fascinating thing that I've been studying a lot recently, and it's this process called oscillation. And oscillation is the balance between the exposure of stress and the experience of rest. A lot of high performers, a lot of high caliber leaders, they are constantly stressed out. And think about it. What do we do when we're typically stressed out, when we have a lot on our plate? We buckle down and we work harder. But what this research study was actually showing and producing through this thing called oscillation in sports, we call it periodization. When you recognize that we actually need rest and we need recovery to perform in this peak and optimal state, then all of a sudden you start to recognize, okay, I'm going to make sure I prioritize it. What doesn't get scheduled doesn't get scheduled, right? So I'm going to put those breaks in my day. I'm going to have goals in this macro cycle level, but also on the micro cycle level, I'm going to do things every single day. So some things that this one individual that talks a lot about oscillation, he always says to prioritize, very practical. He says, prioritize downtime, prioritize exercise, prioritize your rest, your sleeping habits, prioritize your diet, your intake, prioritize your relationships. And the last one is prioritize your purpose. So reminding yourself every day, why do you do what you do? What is the purpose behind it? And then having little subtle reminders. I have little kind of things in my dashboard in my car. I have things on my bathroom mirror, little note cards that just remind me, hey, Zach, you've got this. Keep doing this. Keep moving forward, right? It's okay, because if we listen to ourselves, sometimes that will defeat us. But if we talk to ourselves, that can be the best counter that we need.
Mm, that's good.
We are a lot alike, man. I got sticky notes on my mirror and in my car too. Come on, Zach.
I knew we were brothers. I love when the research just backs up what the scripture is already telling us. I mean, I've been in Exodus. God will not let me get out of Exodus. I've been studying that book forever. And I'm like, can I be done?
For 40 years. Yeah. You got 40 years.
But I'm chewing on the Sabbath piece and how serious this is. But, you know, they're building the tabernacle and Moses is being very clear again, like you work for 6 days and you take the seventh day. I mean, to the point where at that point he's like, or you die. But, you know, that Sabbath and rest is actually for us. Yes. And it's a posture of trusting God to grow the fruit in our lives, and it's not up to us. And as athletes or high performer leaders, there is that pull to like do more, and all of a sudden we'll produce more. And yet this research is showing us the opposite. I would love for you to kind of tease that out a little bit more in terms of here's where I see the problem with clients and probably my own life. We can get addicted to the intensity.
Yes.
So learning how to rest becomes a new discipline and a new practice, and it's uncomfortable. So talk about that uncomfortable phase and any research or tips that you would speak into for those that are learning how to rest and do that oscillating practice.
Like you, Tara, I've always heard that there is an addiction to production, right? Yeah. So it's like, I love doing things well. I love being fast-paced. Culture and society preaches this independence, right? Time and time again. Mm-hmm. Keep going, be more, do more, all of these things. But like you said, when we recognize the significance of rest, for me personally, I've struggled with it. I'll just be completely honest. I actually used to view rest as something where if I was just chilling back, even if I was just hanging out with my wife, and you know, as terrible as this is to say, sometimes my mind would be racing with all of the different things that needed to get done, that I would almost feel unproductive when I was resting. But then I had to remind myself that no, sometimes rest can be the most productive thing, because again, you're allowing yourself to recover. It's the same thing when we recognize this process of oscillation. It's not the stress that's the bad thing. It's the prolonged exposure to stress without that experience of rest. Like when you're lifting weights, right? You're breaking down the muscle ultimately. But if you don't have the proper rest and recovery, if you don't fill yourself with the necessary nutrients and ingredients that allow yourself the opportunity to build back up, you're just going to stay broken down for as long as it happens. But when we recognize it's the muscle that gets broken down that properly builds back up, not only does it build back to what it once was, but it builds back better. And so that's the idea in all of this. To the person out there who maybe doesn't prioritize rest, maybe says, you know what, I'm just going to keep on going. I promise you, eventually it catches up to you, whether that's physically, whether that's mentally, emotionally, relationally, right? Or spiritually. Again, I don't want to try to gain the whole world yet forfeit my soul and the things that matter most.
Mm, so good.
And it shows up in the body so in so many ways. We've both between our disciplines and counseling, which Tara does more coaching now with me, and in the executive coaching space and working with leaders in their businesses and nonprofit spaces. I mean, it's just like you hear the burnout stories and almost it's been so rare, I'll say, that in the years I've been doing that, working within organizational spaces with leaders, both that share our faith and don't, it is amazing. It's so rare to find somebody that says that I'm actually not stressed. I'm not tired. I'm not feeling burned out, and I'm thriving. And love those examples that I do have in clients that have that, because we want to hear more about what that is. And generally speaking, certainly people of faith are integrating a lot of the things that you just described that you're doing too, Zach. You know, these are like headwaters. You know, they bring fresh water into our lives. God knew that. He created these practices, these things that are good for us. And yet, you know, it's hard. We're human. We're carnal, essentially, and we have this pull towards selfishness that will never go away until we meet the Lord face to face. And so, you know, there's this pull into whatever it might be to continue to keep doing and going. And and if anybody's come from a family of origin that has produced a ton, I mean, you've come from that. And yet, you know, what a beautiful example that you do have of some, and there's probably a ton of lessons there that your dad had to go through and that you had to go through even with him, and maybe also apart from him, to be able to come to that settling of convictions that you actually hold and speak to. I fully believe that you are living in that space, but that's a continual choice. Correct.
It is indeed. It's a continual choice. Being able to recognize again, you know, diving into prioritizing the main things, building relationships. I also would say when it comes to burnout, I see this a lot in kids in the next generation, especially when I work with, I love athletics, so I'm going to keep referring to it, but so many kids are burnt out from sport, or so many kids are burnt out from what parents push onto them. I see a lot of parents living vicariously through their kids, right? So it's like, just because the parent wants the kid to live this out, wants the kid to succeed in this, doesn't mean that the kid always wants that for himself. And so when we recognize that, there is this continuum that we always talk about. You guys are probably familiar, the support challenge continuum. When you're cranking on a bolt, right? It can be easily broken. A lot of times we need to recognize what's the balance between supporting our kids, loving our kids. What's the balance between pushing our kids, challenging them, holding them accountable? I always say love and accountability, right? Where there's all love, no accountability makes for a great relationship, but there's no standard of excellence. Where there's all accountability and no love, it leads to no relationship, which only leads to then exhaustion, frustration, and burnout. So where there's a lack of relationship, that's really where I believe, in a sense, the people begin to perish. When you recognize the old adage, right, that rules without relationship leads to rebellion, but yet on the flip side, rules with relationship leads to respect. I want to be able to recognize that we need to build this form of respect within people, because when they feel relationship, when they feel valued, when they feel honored, when they feel accepted, when they feel seen, when they feel safe, those are kind of the ingredients that form great and meaningful relationships, which allow people, in my mind, to be more productive and operate at their highest potential.
That's well said. You know, it makes me want to go off on a tangent here, because I'm thinking about our greater community and the pull towards, you know, we've got club sports. Our daughters play competitively. Many are trying to get to college. You played Division One baseball. And there is this tension because our counseling office is full of high-pressured teens who you know, out of the box anxiety, and we're all kind of looking at their schedule going, okay, no wonder the pressure. And so you're really going underneath to the roots to say, okay, we really need this balance of relationship. And we often go there, like restoring the sense of identity and relationship between the parents and the child. But there's this tension here of wanting to help a kid reach their potential. And so how do you know the difference between who's supposed to go to college and play for college, or is this mom and dad vicariously living through their child, or is this really the child's goal? And speak to that. I mean, just unravel that, because it is everywhere. I mean, it is everywhere. Where parents are, you know, preschool, we're trying to figure out what kind of T-ball team we're going to put them on because they're going to play college ball. We're like,
it's
wow.
Exactly right. I think the greatest form of empathy is inquiry, right? We need to ask more questions rather than make more assumptions. A lot of parents ask, or I should say make a lot of assumptions. Hey, my kid wants to do this because I want them to do this, so on and so forth. But they never really provide the opportunity for their kid to have a voice. That's why, again, inquiry, asking those questions is so important. And oftentimes, the ministry of presence is more important than the ministry of perspective. My friend Catherine Wolf, who I've had on the podcast, says that the ministry of tears is more important than the ministry of truth. So when we just spend time with our kids, when we relate with them, that thing we call special time, right? Where you're spending 20 minutes a day in their world doing something that they would prefer to do, right? Not what you would want to do, mom or dad. When we do those things, then I believe we get to know our kids at a much more intimate and deep level. And I'm always reminded when we talk about just this emotional connectivity to our kids, being able to recognize what are their passions, what are the things that they love to do, of Dr. Dan Siegel's work. I love his work out of UCLA. And he talks about the book, The Power of Showing Up, which the subtitle is, you know, how our kids are wired and how their brains get formed pretty much. And these relationships are built in parental presence. And the four S's he gives are so important, and they're so close and near and dear to my heart. I give them all the time. The first one is that of safety, right? Being able to provide that safe haven, that safe place for this next generation, allowing them to know that, you know what, they're going to go through difficult times, but they at least have a safe haven to come back to, right? So safety, number one. Number two is seeing our kids. And what he means by seeing our kids is not physically, but emotionally. What's going on within their minds? What's going on up here beneath their behavior? We have to be able to see them emotionally. Number three is soothing them. Doesn't promise them a life of ease, but it promises that when they go through tough times, we want to be there to teach them some coping skills, some coping strategies to navigate and maneuver their way through. I love what he says. A soothed child understands that he or she will never have to suffer alone. And then lastly, he says, when we provide kids and we constantly are showing up with safety, seeing them emotionally and soothing them in times of need, we allow them the opportunity to rely and revert back to a secure attachment again. And that's my big thing. If you don't know if your kid wants to do something, then ask. If you don't know if your kid loves this sport or actually wants to push them, then that's okay too. Sometimes kids need a little kick in the butt. Let's be honest. Sometimes they need the challenge. Sometimes they need to be pushed and reminded of the potential that's within them. But if you feel like there's a level of friction that is not being moved through, it's not being transitioned properly, then maybe there's something deeper going on that you need to get into the heart of.
So good. Love Dr. Siegel. Love those four foundational key that every human being needs. And it points to that long-term healthy relationship with God and learning how to find safety, being seen, being soothed, and also having secure attachment with him. So if we do that as parents, I would just say practically, Zach, that for the kid who is kind of vacillates, you know, they're interested in a sport and they're driven, and then they have bad days and they're like, I want to quit. you know, you got to know your child's temperament and their, you know, and so we're helping them. Is this a kid that needs to practice moving through their emotions and moving through bad days? Or is this a kid who is trying to please all the time? And, and so knowing that, asking them, having a voice is huge, but also sometimes I just practically recommend, and I've done this a lot with our own kids, is just say, let's just pray about this and let's give it a week. And see where you're at in a week. I mean, that has often been like, okay, in a week, they're not ready to quit yet. But if you're hearing that consistent, not wanting to go, this is not what I'm excited about, I'm not having fun anymore, and over time, then I think the permission to be able to stop says more to these kids about their value and what we, how we love them, not for what they do, but who they are, can be profound in the long term. So I appreciate that foundation.
Isn't it amazing? I'm sure you see this at the adult clients that you work with, right? That they're looking for that if they didn't get it. And and we are. We spend a lifetime in many cases. Tara, you in private practice when you were doing that, you'd have clients that were much older and into their later decades, and they were still looking for some of that. So helping a younger generation find some of those answers earlier, and helping folks that we're dealing with right now in their young adulthood, their brains may be fully developed, but they miss some things that they've been looking for, and oftentimes in a lot of other areas that aren't satisfying, that aren't that didn't meet the need. Maybe speak to that for a second here, Zach. I'd like to ask you about that, because you know, we're starting to see and read articles and hear feedback across the country about a dissatisfied younger generation that really they found out that the things that they were told weren't really accurate, and they're kind of mad. And there's a validity to how they feel. What are you noticing about that in your counseling office? And how's that getting played out as you help them reconnect?
Yeah, you know, I think like you said, there is that sense of maybe dissatisfaction within the next generation. And I think of the word that comes to mind, obviously, that's connected to dissatisfaction is that of discontentment. We do live in a very preoccupied, discontent world. And I think the biggest goal for me when I'm working alongside of these kids is control what you can control. You know what I mean? You can't control other people's actions. You can't control what they tell you. You can't control their thoughts, but you can control those things within yourself and how you respond to other people. So when we talk about this idea of dissatisfaction and discontentment, I'm constantly reminded too of Philippians 4, where Paul says, "For I have learned to be content no matter the circumstance," right? So obviously contentment and satisfaction and fulfillment and all these things, they aren't just natural byproducts of what we do, right? We actually have to learn them. We actually have to practice them. So when we do simple things like that, I mean, it's as simple as gratitude journals, gratitude walks, walking through, doing things with our kids to connect with them and build that kind of posture alongside of them in that relationship to remind them ultimately that, again, there is so much to be grateful for. There's so much good going on, even in the midst of all the bad. And even though we see, and again, we get swept away with anger and frustration and fear and so many things throughout what we see, whether that's in culture and society, on the media, from our parents, different things like that, that can easily make us angry. Recognizing that God is still on the throne, and that God is still good, that he is still just, that he is still righteous, and that he still really does want to bless those who diligently seek his face. My goal in all of this whole counseling endeavor is to constantly, again, like I said at the beginning, push people back to the heart of God, because in the midst of their pain, I believe that God reveals a deeper depth of his character and who he is.
So good. Okay, we're winding down, Zach. So when you think about all the things you say day in, day out, whether that's with your team at AACC, your clients, to your kiddos, what do you find yourself saying over and over and over? That might be one of your next books, but what do you want to leave our audience with today as we wrap up this podcast?
As we wrap up, Tara, thank you for the question. You know, I actually just finished a book that I titled Even If. And so it stems out of Daniel chapter 3, the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And obviously the backstory and all of that is there was a king named Nebuchadnezzar back in the day. Babylon was pretty much the biggest kingdom around. And this king probably had some brown-nosing fans that came in and were like, hey, you know what? We don't like these three dudes. They're not worshiping the same gods that we worship. We want, you know, you king to build a massive statue. And so this statue that he built of himself more than likely was 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. Imagine that ego problem right there. Boom, boom, boom. But all of a sudden, what he was asking was every time the sound of music gets played, I want the entire city, the entire kingdom of Babylon to bow down and worship me. And there were three dudes that refused to do so. So again, the Brown Nosing Fan Club went to King Nebuchadnezzar and said, hey, I think you need to address these three guys. They're not listening in. And so what does he do? I love this interaction. When he calls them, in a sense, I can see, I can picture it, calls them into their office, right? Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you guys aren't listening? You're not obeying my law, my decree to bow down and worship me at the sound of music. And you know what they say? I love this. I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. That's exactly right, King. And he says, okay, I'll give you one more chance. If you want to, right, I'll play the sound of music and you bow down, very good. But if you don't, I'm throwing you into a burning, hot, fiery furnace that I'm going to turn up 7 times hotter. So there's an inevitable death sentence. And I always think of this, what would I have done in a situation like that? How easy would it have been for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to say, you know what, maybe just this one time, right? I don't want to go in the furnace. But instead, what they say is, you know what, King Nebuchadnezzar, you don't even have the right to approach us regarding this matter. They said, not only, they give us a 3-tiered prayer. Not only is God able, but we also believe that he is going to deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we will not bow down and worship the image you've set up before us. This idea of there's a difference, this is what I'll leave all the listeners with today. There's a difference between what if, only if, and even if. That's how the book is kind of broken up. What if? A lot of people allow the fear of what if to make them settle for what is. And when we live lives of fear, what ends up happening is we sometimes develop this analysis paralysis where we're so afraid of what could happen that we don't change anything whatsoever. I believe that what if leads to complacent faith. But then there's that second term, only if. Only if, right? I know a lot of only if people, to be completely honest with you. Only if leads to a contingent faith. I'll do this only if this works out in my favor. I'll do this only if it's comfortable, it's convenient, right? I'll do this only if I get out of it what I was hoping or expecting to get out of it. A lot of people have a contingent faith. They test God rather than trusting him. But then there's that last piece. And this is what my prayer is for all of the listeners, that we would constantly be developing this even if mindset, faith, strength, and endurance that says, even if it gets hard, even if it gets tough, even if it's painful, even if I don't get out of life what I was hoping or I was expecting to get out of life, I'm going to stay true to my faith. I'm going to stay true to my family, and I'm going to stay true to the standard within me rather than succumbing to the expectations, the opinions, or the circumstances around me. When we can recognize, again, that even if faith leads to courageous faith, that's where I think a lot of good things come into play. And the listener may be out there saying, well, Zach, that's easier said than done. How do you do that? How do you develop the even if faith? I give lots of practical principles throughout this book that are very simplistic, but one that I'll give you is you have to praise before your breakthrough. When we praise before our breakthrough, when we recognize that, again, God is so good, he is so just, he is so faithful, he's not just an authoritarian figure looking down from heaven, just allowing bad things to happen to us, but really he's here experiencing it alongside of us in our midst. There is a just a blessing that comes with that that helps me understand that, you know what, there's an assurance, there's a comfort, there's a peace that surpasses all understanding. And I'll leave our listeners with just 3 verses that I always recite to myself every single day. Romans 8:28, for we know that all things work together for the good of those who love God, who have been called according to his purpose. Maybe the very thing that you felt like Satan was trying to use to destroy you, God is using to strengthen and develop you. Philippians 1:6 says, for I am sure, I am confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will see it through to the day of completion in Christ Jesus. When we recognize this truth, it makes me realize that if there is still breath in your lungs, then God still has an incredible plan and purpose for your life. And lastly, Isaiah 43 verses 1 and 2, they say, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. When you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. the flames will not set you ablaze. I believe that God strategically places people in our life to remind us that he has no greater plan than using others as conduits through which he channels his messages of hope, encouragement, and motivation into a dark and hurting world. So not only does God give us friends for the fire, but there will always be a fourth man in your fire because you're never alone. Again, you haven't lost hope. You've simply lost perspective.
Amen.
Drop the mic.
Amen. Zach, where can people find you? Tell our listeners how to find this book, how to find more resources from you.
This book will be launched on March 1st. We're actually going to be releasing it at a lot of our events. We're kind of going on an event tour coming up here throughout the U.S. when it comes to our Ignite Men's Impact Weekend, which is in Lynchburg, Virginia, March 7th and 8th. We're so excited. I'm sorry, 8th and 9th. It's a sold-out crowd. 5,000 guys will be packing the place up at Thomas Road Baptist Church. But you can visit just the website, zachclinton.com is probably the first place you could go. And I would also say AACC.net, what we're doing with a lot of resources. We want to, again, educate, equip, and encourage not just the clinician, not just the therapist, not just the professional in the field, but also the layperson, the person that wants to know a little bit more about counseling, about mental health care, how they can more effectively kind of recognize these things, respond more effectively and efficiently, and refer out as necessary. All of these things can be found at AACC.net. So that's kind of where I would push your listeners. And I appreciate, again, the opportunity to do that.
Wonderful. And if you are passionate about the next generation, Zach and I will be at the Next Gen conference for AAC in Atlanta. I think tickets are still open for that. And so we'll have that in the show notes as well. But for those that are in youth ministry, if you're a parent of a youth, a child or teen, or you, that is your passion in mental health. So I'll be there as part of the pre-conference and workshops. And Zach, I think you'll be up on the main stage leading the way.
It'll be a lot of fun, Tara. We cannot wait to see what God is going to do. Again, as we just come alongside of parents, teachers, coaches, anybody with a heart that influences and impacts the next generation, my prayer is that they'll be there because these types of conversations, these types of events, in my opinion, matter now more than ever. So I'm so excited that you'll be there to join us.
Zach, it's been awesome having you on the podcast today. Thanks for being a man that cares about, that loves the Lord, that's living in that first and foremost from an authentic place, and then that's turning to others to try to help them connect to the source and through your character and competencies. It's a beautiful thing. So we appreciate you being a part of this today. Look forward to continuing our relationship with you, your dad, the AACC, and just wherever God might lead us.
Again, you guys, Jeff and Tara, thank you all so much for what you're doing, your heart, your passion to do the exact same things. We love partnering alongside of you guys. And again, thank you for the opportunity of joining you guys today.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful. If you have enjoyed this conversation, pass it on to somebody else. Let them know about this podcast, Living Wholehearted, this episode, leave a review, and you can learn more, as always, at livingwholehearted.com and continue to grow to be the leader that you would follow.
Well, did you know that we're not just podcasters? One of the best ways to connect with Tara and I and our whole team at Living Wholehearted is our website, livingwholehearted.com. There you're going to find the books that we've written, our e-courses, executive coaching, organizational development, and professional counseling services. And then one of our favorite things that we're up to these days, our Wholehearted Leadership Cohorts, where we take groups of leaders for 1 to 2 year journeys together. It's amazing. While you're there, for fresh content, make sure that you sign up for our e-newsletter. That's where we're putting out stuff every month that you want to keep close with. So visit livingwholehearted.com.
You can also join us on socials at @living_wholehearted on Instagram, and we are Living Wholehearted on Facebook. You can also follow me at Tara Mattson on Instagram. We love to engage with you personally there, so make sure you reach out. Leave us a review if you're enjoying this podcast.
Hey, thank you for caring about being the kind of person and leader that lives with integrity.